Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batts with Professor Danielle Claude. Her new book is Koala, A Natural History and an Uncertain Future. This is a marsupial. And there are many different kinds of marsupials. There's a family tree. Koala's all by itself. It's phylogenetically sterile. See, I learned it, Professor. What does that mean?
That's an interesting phrase. I mean, the idea is that they're the last of their line. So a little bit like humans, we used to have a whole heap of other relatives in the Homo family or the Homo group of species, but we're the last ones left. You know, the Neanderthals have died out, lots of other Homo species have died out as well. And koalas are in the same camp. So they had lots of other cousins around them at one point, but now there's only one species left. So it's a sort of the end of the line for them.
Once upon a time.
Go
ahead.
Oh, no, unless we happen to speciate and split into two. I don't know how that might happen. Though.
Not till we get to Mars, Danielle.
So that's right.
Once upon a time, the wombats were as big as grizzly bears. Were koalas much bigger at that scale once upon a time?
Yeah, so that was one of the really interesting things I found when I was doing my research was that, you know, there's a lot of debate. People love finding giant versions of animals. And in the megafaunal period, the last ice age, which you'll be familiar with from the woolly mammoths and the, giant sloths and those sorts of things, Australia didn't have those species because we don't have those types of animals. We had giant marsupials instead. So we had things like giant diprotodons, which were 2 tons. You know, the size of a small four-wheel drive car. They look like giant wombats, which maybe doesn't help North American listeners. But I guess it's sort of like a giant bear, a very big bear, a herbivorous bear.
Yes, they do. They're related
to the koalas as well.
They do.
But yes, there is also a giant koala.
All right. It's 37 million years ago, koalas diverged from wombats. 24 million years ago, you find fossils in the Lake District. And what's important now is we're talking about adaptation. The koalas 24 million years ago, do we know what they ate? Do we know if it's similar to what they eat today?
Yeah, when we talk about koalas or fossils, Australia doesn't have a fabulous fossil record just because of the particular geological conditions we have. So the fossils we find of koalas are typically their teeth, and the teeth are the hardest part. They're the hardest bone, as it were, so they're the things that survive. Fortunately, teeth do tell us quite a lot about what an animal eats, and the complexity of the teeth, especially for herbivores, tells us how hard the food is that they're eating. A lot of the early koalas have relatively simple teeth, the cusp. If you feel your molars with your tongue, you can feel there's lots of ridges and sharp edges. Well, if you know koalas, it's even more. They're like scissors. So they've got these crenulations in their teeth, and when they slice through a gum leaf, it's like a pair of pinking shears. You know, the scissors dressmakers use that make a zigzag pattern. So they're chopping up the leaves like that. Those really complex crenulations are a characteristic of modern koalas and not of the older species. So we can assume that that's related to the increasingly tough leaves of the eucalypts that modern koalas are adapted to. And eucalypts and modern koalas appear at about the same time, which is an interesting coincidence in the fossil record. So they seem to be very closely related in terms of their evolution.
We go to the Lake District, which is no longer a lake district because it dries up, but every once in a while it used to fill with water. Maybe it will again, because that is where you find fossils that begin to tell the story of the koalas. Parakoala palancarenica. That is something that's been discovered. What does that tell you about the evolution of the koala?
Yeah, so there's a few different sites in Australia where we have really rich fossil histories. There's what I've called the Lake District of South Australia, which is a dry lake district, a salt lake district. So it's quite famous for having really large inland salt lakes. But there's also other areas in the north. There's Riversleigh, which is a really important fossil site in Queensland for marsupials. There's other fossil records down the east coast and across in Western Australia in caves, those sorts of places. But the really interesting thing about a lot of the sites is that at the time when these fossils were formed, those areas were actually swampy, lush forests. They were not the dry, hard eucalypt forests or indeed the desert that they are now. They were lush forests filled with a lot of species that lived in trees. We find tree kangaroos, so kangaroos that live in trees, which we still have today in the north of Australia, but at that time they were all around the south. So that tells us that Australia was a really rich forested area across the south as well as up the east coast. So since then, Australia has dried out and a lot of those areas have become dry desert kind of areas without any trees or very few trees. So it's a very different origin for koalas. We think of them as being drought-adapted species, which they are, but their origins are in wet forests. So water is really important to them.
So this creature, which is large or small and thick fur or not so thick fur, depending on where in Australia they're living right now. The north is more tropical, so they'd have thinner fur. All of this surrounds the fact that we have to talk about what they eat because it's unique. They have a very predictable diet every day. And I'm speaking to Daniel Claude. The book is Koala, A Natural History and an Uncertain Future. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bell.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
In the next Rare Well Done, the Thrive team helps two people with CIDP tackle the tricky issue of friendship.
Hello.
They say the quiet part out loud.
In the event my CIDP worsens, my friends might decide it's too much.
Get nudged outside their comfort zone.
I don't know if I want to.
To forge stronger connections.
The best thing that's ever happened to me, our friendship.
To Rory.
Watch Rory and Michelle take on the friendship factor on the next episode of Rare Well Done.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch. With Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings, 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.